first one's trash?
The one on the right.
The first one. Why couldn't you just say yes, the first one?
Because if you're staring at them, for me, the first one is the one on the left.
Oh my goodness. We have just absolutely the opposite ways of describing everything. Everything.
Hey, PodFam, Colby here. Before we hop into today's episode, I did want to tell you about this fantastic new-to-me headphone company called Sudio. That's S-U-D-I-O. They are a Scandinavian headphone company, and recently I've been trying out their Tray model, and let me tell you why I'm digging the Tray model. Because these sweat-proof, Bluetooth, in-ear headphones have really been working for me as I've been trying to run. That's right, trying to run. I can't call myself a runner just yet, but I've been trying to run regularly. And for the first few months when I have been trying to run, I was just using those regular old Apple ear pod things. And so I had to have the cord dangling down my shirt or dangle in front of me. And they would occasionally fall out. I think you know what I'm talking about if you've ever tried to run with earbuds. But then Sudio comes along, and they have these Bluetooth headphones, so there's no cable attaching to my phone, which is fantastic. They have this fantastic wingtip design that stays in my ear hole, which I gotta tell you, when you're running, staying in ear hole is good. And they're completely waterproof, so all of my wonderful sweat does not impact the electronics. And maybe my favorite thing about it is not only is the sound quality great, but this particular model still lets you hear some of the ambient noise around you. So you're not completely sealed off from traffic, from other humans that you might run into. So it feels kind of safe as well to run around. So anyway, Sudio is giving our PodFam a special 15% off of any purchase if you are in the market right now for Bluetooth headphones. And they have a couple other models in addition to the Tray, such as the Regent, which are like these fancy big headphones that go all the way over the ear and have amazing sound quality, also Bluetooth. So just go to sudio.com and in the checkout section, put the discount code Kate and Colby, and that'll give you 15% off. So if you're in the market for headphones, I highly recommend Sudio. They look good, they feel good, and they sound great. This is a Progressive Christian podcast featuring me, Colby.
And me, Kate. And we make this because we believe in your potential to thrive.
Welcome to the Kate and Colby Show. Recently, the Christian church celebrated the ascension of Christ. You know, that strange story about the resurrected Jesus drifting away, leaving his disciples left staring at the sun, blind and bewildered. As I reflected this year on this honestly weird tale, one of the main questions that kept coming back to me was a question that I believe the ascension first posed to the earliest disciples and still poses to us 2,000 years later. And the question is this: so now what are you going to do? The DJ has begun the final spin. The bartender has shouted for last call. The dance floor begins to at once both empty from those wanting to beat the crowd home and swell up from those wanting to get in one final sweat amidst the beat of the crowd. But in the words of the 90s pop band Semisonic, it's closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So now, what are you going to do? The curtains on this moment are closing, and try though you may to be present and suck every last marrow of joy from it while you can, you also know the end is near, that it cannot last. But does anything last? Thermodynamics gives us the scientific response. Well, no, everything is in decay. Lasting is an illusion, a fool's hope, an exercise in futility. But even without science, we know this is true, that things don't last. Especially the best things, the highest highs, the greatest joys, they all have their expiration date. They all have the moment when the click-clack of the roller coaster track stops ratcheting, and for a brief moment you've reached the pinnacle with nowhere to go but down. Now, this isn't to minimize the highs, nor to detract from the joys. If anything, it might even highlight how truly remarkable they are that we even get to climb the summit and see the sun set from the zenith at all is a testimony to being alive. But we cannot stay on the mountaintop. The saying, "the honeymoon is over," is cliche for a reason, because all honeymoons do indeed end. The concentrated euphoria is a gift to be enjoyed, but should not be expected to last. The clear waters of Hawaii's beaches that brought you respite and peace will one day be nothing more than a photograph on the wall, desperately pleading to be remembered. Or, more painfully put, eventually that heavenly smell of your baby's head and breath are replaced by the hideous stench of stale cheese and salty sweat. And even when you can trick death by calling encore so loudly that the band has no choice but to return to the stage for one last song, it will not keep the house lights from inevitably shining, the janitorial squad beginning with their brooms, and nothing but the ringing in your ears to accompany you home. Chaucer gave our language articulation of this truth when he wrote that everything has ending, or, as we say it today, all good things must come to an end. And when they do, there is but one question before us. So now, what are you going to do? The first followers of Jesus likely expected that once he came back from the dead, he would hang with them forever, continuing to lead and shepherd and teach and show them how to implement the kingdom of God on earth as it is in heaven. So imagine their surprise when instead he drifted away one afternoon, leaving them to their own devices. Leaving them to descend from the mountaintop once again, asking of themselves and of one another, "So now what?" In your own life, have you recently said goodbye? Have you recently ended a relationship or had one end for you? Have you recently ended a job or had one end for you? Have you recently started a relationship or started a job? Have you recently experienced a season of great jubilation, great success, great fulfillment? Or have you recently perhaps asked so many questions about what you believe anymore that it feels like there's nothing left? Or have you recently developed new and thrilling ideas about yourself and about God and about the world around you? On the heels of great successes, at the end of something wonderful, or shortly after your goals have been reached, the temptation is always there to despair and to think, "Well, was that it? Are all my best days behind me? Did I peak too soon?" I think one can easily fall into believing that it won't ever be as good as it once was. We can be paralyzed by the past, or at least made inert by the memories of how it used to be. Such thoughts can render us unnecessarily pessimistic about all the glorious potentials of the roads ahead. We might instead stop in the path and build a monument meant to memorialize the past, but instead it becomes a resting place for us to tarry, content to linger longer than we should. I wonder, have you grown stale? Have you rested far too long? Have you listened to the lies of the lazy one, that great manipulator that says all your best days are behind you? Have you resigned in the face of so-called failure, forgetting the words of Confucius who said, "Our greatest glory is not in never failing, but in rising every time we fall"? So whether following defeat or victory, we still must reckon with what we are going to do next. For the first disciples, the ascension, the reckoning with the absence of their leader, it launched them into a whole new world of possibilities that were previously unimaginable to them. To return once again to Semisonic, every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. The question, "So now what are you going to do?" is the cold splash of water to awaken within us eyes to see that while breath still fills our lungs, there is much work to do. Not because life is about the work, but because it is in the doing of the work that we can find life. When we say yes to the activity of the divine, say yes to the pursuit of a deeper connection to yourself, to others, and to God, say yes to love, to wholeness, to flourishing, there is no arriving. There is only the work of yes, the dance, the movement, the asking of the question, "So now what?" and responding with life. The power of the ascension, it lies not in the veracity of whether someone supernaturally floated into the heavens, The power is in the way it forces us all to attend the present moment with purpose and intention and awareness that where we go from here is largely up to us. All good things must come to an end, yes, but may we have the eyes to see the many more good things that are yet to come.
Hi, Pod Fam. The episode you are about to enjoy in your eardrums, we recorded a few weeks ago, and when we had this conversation about this delightful topic, we had absolutely zero idea who we were talking about. We just had this thing burning inside of us, this topic that we were enamored by, frustrated with, grappling with, trying to figure out how we felt about it, ourselves and our own lives. And it's a super nuanced conversation. We end the episode still not really understanding how we feel about it. We kind of come from different places on it, disagree about it. We're wrestling with it. The whole episode, we're wrestling with this topic. But as we're wrestling, we actually have no idea what we're talking about. We don't know how to name this thing that we're wrestling with. We don't have anything to call it. And we found it very difficult to describe it, right?
Yeah, we kept looking for something to hang the hat on.
Yeah.
And we couldn't find...
There just wasn't anything there
we,
for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, we couldn't find like how to name it. Like you said, we were talking about it, but we didn't know... We didn't have a bucket to put it in.
We wanted to tell you, PodFam, what we were talking about so that then we could flesh that out and have a deep conversation about it. But instead, we kind of just had the deep conversation and never really named for you what it was we were talking about. So
we're trying to come up with a title and we're like, what do we call this? I don't know. Because what do we talk about? I don't know. It's just super nuanced.
What are we
nuanced.
Talking about? Yeah.
But then, so then I come back from my trip from New York and I'm hanging out with a bunch of millennial leaders for a week. And in one of the sessions, we're brainstorming different things that can hold organizations back from flourishing. And somebody pipes up and says the phrase cancel culture. We need to get rid of cancel culture. And inside I'm like,
oh, someone was saying we need to get rid
of it. Yeah. Like we need to cancel culture. And inside I'm thinking, oh, I have no idea what cancel culture is. Oh, well, I'm too embarrassed to ask questions. Moving on. Fortunately, someone else in the group does not share my shame and they raise their hand and say, oh, back up. Can you explain cancel culture for me? And so I'm like, got to hear what cancel culture is. So there's this phrase, Kate,
that's awesome.
That we didn't know about that is called cancel culture. And it is
it's what we're talking about.
It's the thing that names that phenomenon where businesses, individuals, corporations are incredibly quick to cancel people nowadays based on anything that might violate or seem to violate their ethos or their values or whatever it is, just canceled. You're out. Mm-hmm. Recently I could think of the Roseanne Barr phenomenon. I don't know if we reference it in the episode or not, but
we don't.
It's like that where, you do this one thing that we don't like, you're canceled, you're out, the whole thing's over.
It's funny, as you're describing this, I can feel your stance on it coming through a little bit.
Oh, really?
Which people are about to hear in the conversation. Yeah. And then my disagreement is bubbling up because I'm like, yeah, they effing should cancel. And like, I still have that fire in me of like, I don't want to cancel culture. I believe in cancel culture. I want cancel culture. Yeah. So we just come from a little bit different places, but at least we have a name for it.
We have a name for it. And so as you're listening to the episode, just imagine Kate or I occasionally dropping in the phrase cancel culture to kind
just
of
pretend.
Put a bucket around it. Even this morning I was reading, did you see about James Gunn and Guardians of the Galaxy?
I did not see anything on
James
anything
Gunn
today.
Directed first two volumes of Guardians of the Galaxy.
I just love
slated to schedule or to do direct number three.
Okay.
And he got canceled by Disney because someone who like makes their mission to dredge up old people's stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a super conservative, like right wing conspiracist person, does this to many people. He found tweets from James Gunn from about 9 years ago that were not in line with the ethos of Disney today. And so Disney canceled James Gunn and said, you're not the director. Mm-hmm. And when you read these tweets, sure, some of them are pretty awful. But like that was 9 years ago. And at the time, like context is just everything. That's what we talk about in the episode.
That's what
context,
we get to.
Nuance,
there's so much nuance.
Because at that time, James was like in the world of creating raunchy movies. Like that's the world he was in. So he was like, my job was to be a provocateur. Like that's what I was supposed to be doing. And he said, that's not who I am anymore. So do we give people the space to grow and to change and evolve and,
right.
instead of just canceling them?
And anyway. As comes up in what you're about to hear, my feelings are like, I, because of where I come from and like the heart of who, core of who I am, I will have to not go look at those tweets so that I can continue to love the two first movies of Guardians of the Galaxy, because I love those movies. They're like my favorite ever. And if I go look at his tweets, I will seriously not like those movies anymore, because that's how cancel cultured my brain is. Like I'm just a little bit more fiery than you are, I think. So I think that's that part of that. Anyway, you're about to hear an interesting conversation about cancel
culture. It's a good episode. I just wish we had this language. Yep. But
now we do. So we're adding it in. So enjoy what you're about to hear. Guess we've got that figured out. Hey, you've been thinking a lot about something lately, which is different from normal.
Lately, I've been thinking a lot
normally,
about something.
Normally, you just kind of coast in life, but lately you've...
I've taken a different track in life. Deciding to think about things.
No, but this real weird thing has come up for you lately.
It has.
Yeah, I want to talk about it because I'm real curious.
Okay.
I'm going to verbal process the shit out of this one.
Okay. VPS.
Let's do it.
all right. So here's how maybe...
Sweaty VPS.
That's a trending hashtag if I've ever heard one. All right. So here's maybe how we get into it. Because here's how it came into my consciousness.
Okay.
The last probably 2 months... I've been going through a book with a group of guys. I meet with them every Tuesday morning.
You've gone through a lot of Brené Brown. You've gone through...
Yeah, we basically meet and talk about books. It's like a book club.
It's very similar to that.
Yeah, so we read books and we get together and talk about it. It's very... Mm-hmm. So imagine a book club. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. That's what it's that, what you've imagined. And we were needing a new book recently. A guy at the co-working space that I work at several months ago was like, hey, have you ever heard of this guy, Jordan Peterson? I've never heard of him. Tell me. And he said, oh, he's just this. And he goes on to describe him. And I thought, that's interesting. I go to this guy's website and I'm there for just a few minutes. And I see things like he has this, there's like personality assessment. He calls it self-authoring. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I like those sorts of things. And then I look a couple of his writings and he talks a lot about ancient mythology and archetypes within different religions, things I'm super intrigued by. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, this guy has some really cool things to say about this. Okay, this guy at the office says it's a great book and I like what I'm reading on the website. And so I text my guys. And I was like, for our next group that functions kind of like a book club, why don't we read this new book by Jordan B. Peterson called The 12 Rules of Life? And so everybody up until this book has pretty much trusted my judgment. and so they said, yes, sure, let's do it. So we get the book. We read the week that we're reading the first chapter, it comes to some of our attention in the group that, oh, this guy, this Jordan B. Peterson guy, he's been making the news in the last couple years for things that would probably make all of us in the group angry. And I won't get into all the details here. Some of our listeners might know what those is, know what those are. But essentially, he is not...
Well, it comes down to like his gender and sexuality.
Yeah.
That's what I've seen of him.
Yeah, yeah. So Canada was going to pass this law requiring the use of certain... requiring pronouns for how people wanted to have pronouns used for them. And Jordan B. Peterson is so about... free speech that this was an impingement for him. So he came out against the law. And in doing so, just kind of became a caricature of a jackass for people that have different sexual or gender identities and orientations.
Totally. And just the other day I saw an article in my Facebook feed on him because he's got this weird view on masculinity and he like doubles down on
absolutely
masculinity being so important in leadership. And I'm like, what the actual
fuck? So he's got some real hardcore binary beliefs on gender and sexuality, like that would make you and me, and they do make me cringe. Like anyone who sort of is a progressive leaning person, and most of our listeners are progressive leaning, yeah, are not down with that stuff. But I didn't know any of this, and I invite my guys to all read this book. So, and then we find out that, oh, this guy has been like the favorite author and YouTube personality and speaker for the alt-right. Oh, fantastic.
What?
Oh, that's so great.
I don't think I realized
like the
that.
Alt-right has been like heralding him as the voice of reason for their movement. And I asked our guys to read the book unknowingly about all this. So, okay. So that's been my experience the last couple of months. I'm reading this book.
You guys stuck with it.
Stuck with it. Having these conversations with these guys that I love and adore. And so let me pause that. Then I've also been getting into the podcast and some of the writings of Sam Harris. And Sam Harris is an avowed atheist. He gets lumped in with a lot of the new atheist movement, Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens. And so an avowed atheist, but he's recently come out with a book that's all about meditation and spirituality. So he, you know, he sees the empirical research that shows that mindfulness and meditation is good and healthy. And so he talks about that, but very much an atheist. And so is, you know, historically pretty antagonistic toward religion, and religious leaders, of which I am one. But I've really been digging his podcast and digging a lot of what he has to say. And then to go back to Jordan B. Peterson, The 12 Rules of Life, as I've been reading this book, yes, there are things every other paragraph that I find completely abhorrent and off-putting and wrong. And also there are things that he says that I'm like, I've never heard anyone say it like that. And I love it. And he has some really fascinating insights, and he's done a lot of research into a lot of areas. And I've just been gleaning all of these wonderful insights and truths. So here's the thing that the one thing that I've been thinking about lately, as you mentioned, is how, is how, truly, fascinating it is. So I'll get specific here and then I'll get more universal. How truly fascinating it is that most of the people that I work with and do ministry with and have relationships with identify as progressive and even bigger than that, progressive Christian. My assumption is that most people in this sort of tribe of progressive Christianity would be down with Sam, would be okay with Sam Harris. Mm-hmm. And they would, like me, they would glean a lot from him. They would enjoy things that he has to say. They would not be embarrassed to suggest to their Tuesday morning book group to read a Sam Harris book. Okay. They'd be like, okay, that's cool. Knowing full well that they themselves don't identify as atheist and that they, you know, they disagree with Sam on a lot of sort of fundamental things about his worldview. And at the same time, I also think a lot of the people in sort of my progressive Christian world would very much not be down with Jordan B. Peterson and very much not want to read his book and not want to listen to his talks because they disagree with some of the fundamental parts of his worldview. And so it got me thinking, okay, so what is it about the human experience where we are constantly receiving input from sources, whether it's news sources, online articles, whether it's real humans in our life or people that we read or listen to or follow. We're learning from sources constantly. We're getting input and data. When do we decide that some sources get contaminated mm-hmm. or some sources get discredited based on certain attributes of the source, certain ideas that the source has? When do we decide that this source is no longer creditable or no longer worth my time and energy or has nothing to offer me? And when do we decide that this source, imperfect though it may be, I still will be open to it? Because the reality is for me, my assumption and my operating experience in the world is that all sources are imperfect. That there is going to be no one person that we 100% agree with. There's not going to be no one source that 100% gets it right. And so I've been reflecting on, okay, so how do we decide sort of internally which sources we're going to shut ourselves off to and which ones we're going to be open to, knowing that if we dig deep enough into the source, there will be things that we just fundamentally disagree with or can't stand. And then I have a whole bunch of other tangents, but good Lord, that's a lot of me talking. So
Well, okay, so
Do some responding.
Right away, because of the two examples that you chose to use, I have my very first really... So there's something that's glaring for me in those two examples, which is that you said, what's the guy's name? I don't know the other guy.
Sam Harris.
Mm-hmm. You said stuff about like progressives being okay with him. And I'm like, yeah. Like, so my first response to everything you just shared, well, first of all, this conversation is fascinating to me. There's so much here. Like, I don't even know if we're gonna be able to dig into all the facets and the nuances of this conversation. It's fascinating to me to think about. I love this topic. I love thinking about like, when do I just, and my brain, I will just put all my cards on the table. Most of the time default to check you off my list. I'm not going to listen to you. Like that's default setting of like, nope, not for me. So, so I know that about
and
myself.
I want to come back to that and yes, see totally. If you know what the things are that are.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll dig more into that. Okay. But what came up to me in your two examples, my response to what you shared was, well, duh, we'd be okay with Sam Harris and not. And I don't mean that in a rude way, but that was my response.
Yeah, totally.
That was my gut response because it's so obvious for me that this Sam Harris, that Sam Harris isn't in his atheism hurting anybody, and that what's the other dude? Sorry, I can't remember these
guys'
names.
They're both white dudes. Come on, why do you not know them?
I know. What is my problem?
Jordan Peterson.
And Jordan Peterson is.
Yeah.
I'm using the most simple, pared back, blatant terms to make a point. Mm-hmm. So I get that. I know that I'm being really simplistic here, but overly simplistic, but it's to make a point. I feel that Sam Harris is not hurting people with these views that would be like contradicting to mine or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that Jordan is hurting people mm-hmm. with his views. So for me right there, that's like a starting point. If I find that someone, an author, a speaker, whatever, has these worldviews that rub up against mine and mm-hmm. are like, ooh, I don't agree. I can still get down with them all the way to that point to where I'm like, what did you just say about that gender? Excuse me. Mm-hmm. And then I'm out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So that for me is a hard line of justice issues. To say you don't believe in God, I promise you doesn't hurt people. To say that you think religion is a sham, even that, it really isn't. We could sit and have all kinds of conversations about like, I take more the approach of like interfaith and honor all religions because religion is important to a lot of people. But I don't think to say that that you don't buy into or you don't believe in organized religion or you think or even to criticize it and say that it can be harmful. I do that. Like, I don't think that's hurtful to criticize religion and to not believe in God. I don't think that hurts people.
So I want to agree with you. But then when I rewind my own clock of life mm-hmm. to a time when I was more conservative and evangelical with my worldview, I do remember experiencing, I don't know if I would have described it as hurt, just because I don't know that I had language for that, but yeah, reading and hearing about what the new atheists had to say about religion and about God. Yeah, that was, I think what I'm saying is I wonder if we're discounting the way that someone like Sam Harris, the way his words and his ideas do impact people for whom they hold those ideas so closely. So yeah, I think that's what's interesting is that it's subjective to a person on which beliefs do we hold in a way that if they get challenged, we experience a particular emotional response to it or not.
Yeah. So you and I are probably just going to agree to disagree on this because I come back to, you just said like people would feel hurt by his views, but like that's not a people group that he's disparaging, whereas the other is. Like it's just fundamentally different for me for a person to be like, yeah, organized religion, it's a bunch of bullshit. Women are lesser than men. Like those are just so fundamentally different that I can't really get down with the idea that, oh, poor people who believe in God and are religious would feel hurt. Like I think you need to be more secure in your beliefs to not be hurt and bothered by a person who's questioning those beliefs.
And I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100% that I feel like there is a difference there.
Yeah.
But if I put myself in the position of someone who would be wounded by Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins, I don't know that I'm prepared to discount their pain by saying, no, that's not real for you. Like, I think it is real for them.
Yeah, we may just agree to disagree on this.
Okay. So you would say to someone like, no, that's not, your pain isn't real around that.
You know me. You know that I am a pain honoring person, like that I think everybody's pain is real and I don't do like a pain hierarchy thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's a yes and for me. Like, I don't do a pain hierarchy thing. I think pain is pain, but not but, and I like and. And there just is a fundamental difference between being hurt in a, someone really thinks my beliefs are silly, that's painful, and someone believes my humanity isn't full
for
humanity.
Sure.
That's, so we agree on that.
Yeah.
And so I just think that if you're wounded by someone's words, I think there is such thing. I can't believe I'm saying this. Again, I'm a verbal processor, everybody. You can send me in your emails saying that these things weren't fair of me to say. But I think there's something to, if you're wounded by a guy, and again, I don't know Sam Harris either, so maybe he's like real awful about the things he says about religious people.
My experience is that he's not awful. He's gracious in his posture. He's just very clear in his beliefs.
So I am speaking from the correct place then. So in that, I'm saying, I think that if you're wounded by that, about hearing someone else's views, I think that's your work. I personally believe that's your work.
Totally agree. 100%. Okay.
So then, yeah. So I guess we're just, for you, there's something there though.
For me, there's something.
And for me, it's not. It's like,
for me, I can say that that person needs to do their work, and I can say that pain that you're experiencing for you is real pain. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why that matters to me is to go back, is because you said that one person is causing pain, another one isn't causing pain. Because for you, that helped you know which sort of one you would be open to and which one you wouldn't be open to. Mm-hmm. And I just, my immediate response was, they're not causing you pain, but I can almost guarantee that they are causing some people pain. So maybe we can move on from Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson, because
because we're going to get lost in this. But also, I want to clarify that I'm not coming from a place of it's only if someone's causing me pain. I'm talking about justice issues. I'm talking about
I misrepresented your point there.
Let's dig deeper, because I think we're both really actually probably agreeing, but I think the reason why you're continuing to dig about the Sam Harris thing, I think if tell me if I'm wrong, but I think the reason why you're continuing to dig is because it's a larger conversation of, but what is that in our brains that shuts people down? And then sometimes doesn't.
Like, that's right.
We know that all of humanity is flawed, and some of our, I've had so many times where I'll just fangirl on a writer, and I'll fangirl and fangirl and fangirl, and then I'll hit this moment where I'm like, oh, I just can't even enjoy your stuff anymore. We've all had those moments, and that's what you're getting at.
Yeah.
That experience, that human experience, and you're saying, isn't it interesting where there's certain lines that we draw?
Certain lines that we draw.
What are those?
And yeah, so that's part of it, and part of it is also, I know for a fact, you said this earlier about yourself, like, I know for me, I'm quick to just write people off. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact, if I would have known more about Jordan Peterson and mm-hmm. known the positions that he held and the ideas and known that he's very important to the alt-right, I guarantee you, I would not have ordered his book. I would not listen to his podcast. I would not have recommended to my guys. And then I would have missed out on these last few months of really getting a lot of great stuff from his book and his podcast. I just would have missed out on that.
Yeah.
And it's this like real jarring thing for me of, how much of my own growth and transformation am I stunting mm-hmm. by having these, some really hard boundaries around which sources I will let into my mind and which I won't. And how much does that contribute to just creating my own bubble, my own
Yeah.
And not letting other voices that they have different thoughts about different things than me in some real important ways. Because
there's something to be said for not living in the bubble.
I really think there's something to be said for that right now.
Yes. Every Facebook friend I have is somebody I agree 100% with on everything. Maybe that's a problem.
Yeah. And I can only sit here and say that about, say this about Jordan B. Peterson, and I'm not a Peterson apologist. I'm just speaking to my own experience with him, but I can be 100% honest and say, if I would have known, I would not have. And so I'm really glad I didn't know. I'm glad that I sort of naively walked into it.
Are you fully though? Because what about this part of this nuanced layered conversation? What about money being a vote? Like, what about supporting financially businesses and artists whom we know cause actual damage? Because I get what you were saying about wounds are wounds, but I'm still going to keep digging my heels in here that actual wounds are being inflicted in one area, whereas I believe they're not in another area.
It's a great question.
You know,
I would say for me, I just don't have consciousness around that. I buy cheap electronics that are made cheaply with labor stuff. I buy clothes that are I can just honestly say I don't have consciousness around that. So for me to sort of pick a case and say, oh, now I'm going to vote with my money. I don't know. It doesn't move the needle for me very much, even though I get for some people that probably would be a thing. Like, oh, I'm not going to give this person money because I can't support them. But then I would just open up their closet and be like, what about this, 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 this? Like,
oh, see, for me, I want so badly to be the person who's entirely conscious around those things and only owns things that are ethically sourced and bought. I know that I'm not there at all, and I don't think I perfectly can be. But like, if I'm super aware, like some things I'm just not aware yet. Mm-hmm. Some things are just easier. I'll just admit that. Like sometimes I'm lazy or whatever. But like, for me, I hear you saying I can't do it perfectly, so I'm just not going to worry about that part, which I don't think you're saying fully. But like, I would like to worry about that. I would like to care where my dollars go towards.
Yeah,
promote these ideas or whatever.
Super dope. I think I heard someone recently say like, we can only realistically deeply care about three things. And I think they were just arbitrary in their number, but I think their point was this, which is the thing that we're talking about, which is if you want to make like, not you personally, but a person wanted to make where their money goes, being going to sustainable and good places as one of their main things, like that limits their capacity to like invest their time and energy and resources into other socially conscious efforts or social justice efforts. And so I just think for me, I'm not a vegetarian. I can guarantee you that if I were to like really focus on my education and knowledge in that area, that would probably be a thing that I would like invest in, which means something else in my life would then have to sort of not get invested in. And there's just other things that I'm right now sort of really hyper-focused on. So anyway, I don't know how
we could go down a really long rabbit trail with that. It's reminding me of an old fight we got in, and I actually really want to go down that rabbit trail, but we should stick to this topic.
Okay. So sticking to this topic. So then circling back to, because I think that all sources and all people are flawed. I was thinking recently about how when JFK was president, there wasn't a ton of access to him. There wasn't a lot. There definitely wasn't the 24-hour news cycle. There wasn't Twitter. There wasn't paparazzi. So people just didn't know much about JFK outside of sort of the main news sources and the things the White House wanted people to know about. We know after the fact, you know, now that he's dead and gone and more people have told their stories, like we know now, like, oh man, that guy was not a super moral person in the White House in terms of choices that he made. By contrast, our current president, we know we probably don't know all of his shadows, but we know a heck of a lot about his shadows because there's just a lot more access, a lot more information. And so it becomes a lot easier for us to know nowadays more about our heroes and what their baggages are versus heroes of old that we just didn't know. And so one of my questions is, okay, so once we learn things about heroes of old, does that discredit their massive gifts to the world?
A little bit.
Does it for you?
My answer is a little bit. Yeah. I truly keep coming back to how nuanced and layered this is because it's humanity. We're basically having a conversation about humanity. Like, we're all humans and we're all deeply flawed and imperfect. So I can't say, yes, it does, or no, it doesn't. For me, it's like, I'm just right in the middle on this topic. It does a little bit. It does a little bit for me. If I love a bunch of JFK quotes and ideas, and then I find out he's a dick, yeah, it totally affects the way I think about him. Mm-hmm. Especially since a lot of people are just such hypocrites. Mm-hmm. Like, I just really don't have any respect for you anymore is a real thing for me. I've lost respect for you. I don't buy it. Can we be over the top with that? Sure, sometimes, but I'm glad I know everything I know about Trump, and I hope we move in a direction where we hold a higher moral standard for people that we follow as leaders. Like, I know we're all flawed. Yeah. I know we can't be perfect, but I don't want to, because the whole thing about, which leads to this, the whole thing about our obsession with like following people, mm-hmm. like and looking to them as mm-hmm. leaders and guides, you know, getting obsessed with an author or a speaker. That's kind of a funny thing about humans. And I think that if we're going to allow ourselves that human behavior, like really just live into that and be like, oh, I love this person's thoughts and I kind of follow them as my guide, right? If we're going to do that, I think that we should follow people who are full of integrity and have a high moral standard. I just really actually believe in having a high moral standard. I don't want to follow someone and then watch them be a dick to the little people, you know? Like, I just...
100%. Yes.
I don't know. For me, this topic, I get a little like, what are we discussing here? If somebody's an asshole, let's not follow their work. But I am the one that keeps saying it's nuanced and layered too. Yeah. So I know I'm being kind of funny, but yeah, the answer to that is it does. It does retroactively make me go back and be like, oh, maybe he did some good work, but I'm not going to respect him for it. I'm not going to be like, oh, he's a hero. I'm going to be like, oh, turns out he was a dick. You know?
Yes. Yes, I do know. So then it makes me think, is it quantity of dickishness or is it the specific quality of the dickishness that would render someone, that would move someone from a category of this is a person that I will follow and this is a person that I will, because I'm with you. We should, I agree with you 100%. If we're going to choose guides for this life, then we should choose people that are like moving the needle forward for
especially
everybody.
The ones leading our freaking country.
Yes. Yeah. That should matter. Mm-hmm. But if we had a camera on that person 24/7, we would.
Right. I shudder at the thought of somebody watching me.
Yes. Yeah. We would always inevitably find you could splice together, you know, like how Big Brother will put together one of our favorite trash TV shows. We'll put together these segments where they put all the worst person's behaviors, you know, in this sort of funny 30-second clip. You could make that for, I would argue, anybody, which would make a person then instantly turn it off. Like, oh, forget it. I'm not going to follow you. Like, that's right. How you talk to your kids. That's how you treat your spouse. That's what you do to the person in the Starbucks line. I'm just saying, like, I think that's probably true for everybody. So what is it? Is it quantity? Is it how often the person exhibits those behaviors? Is it, or I think what maybe is more true for me is it's the type of instances.
It's type of instances and the spirit and attitude of the person. Sorry, was I interrupting you?
I don't think so.
Well, you've talked a lot, so I'm going to say something. Let's bring it back to us personally as pastors. Yeah. Like, think about people following us. People follow us. You're so sweet. You're really fired up about this topic.
I am so, because I don't know how to think about it. So this is good.
I know. And I'm over here convinced I know how I think about it and yet can't flesh it out. So we're kind of funny in this. But think about us as pastors. I think we're actually a great example. So at our church, when we started Sojourn, we started with a spirit and attitude of we don't want to step into that place of like pastor worshiping, like where people like put us on a pedestal. And Brene Brown says the worst thing you can do to a person is put them on a pedestal, right? Mm-hmm. And we've read lots lately. What was that one article about what fame does to you? Anyway, the point is
Ta-Nehisi Coates reflecting on how fame just completely sideswiped him.
Yes.
And gave him a whole new perspective on people like Kanye.
Look up that article. Was it called What Happened to Kanye? I can't remember, but look it up. Just look
Kanye's
up.
Not black, he's Kanye or something.
Is that
like
what
that.
It's called? But point being that worshiping people and putting them on pedestals, it actually does something to them, right? And I think that's getting at this whole topic that we're discussing, because what it does to people is it kind of ruins their humanity for them. Like, they are not allowed to be human anymore. So in starting Sojourn and knowing that leaders are still needed, we needed leaders for this thing. We were going to be those leaders. We wanted to do leadership differently, where we're constantly working, and I think we're still constantly doing it, to set a tone where, please don't worship us and put us on a pedestal. Mm-hmm. Like, we're human with you, so that people can gain wisdom from us. Mm-hmm. They can use us as guides if that works for them even, but not the second they see our humanity have the whole thing fall out from underneath them, which is what we're talking
which
about.
Which is
so
what
I think
happens.
People have witnessed us making ridiculous mistakes, being entirely incredibly human. I think it's the spirit and attitude of the leader who we're talking about. Like, I hope to God that I will be a leader who, first of all, if I make a mistake, will own it. I think that's a huge difference. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm fine with a guy who screws up if he's going to say I screwed up entirely. And you're right. It also comes back to the kind of mistakes. Like, if we're leading Sojourn, but like, screwing each other over and like doing really stealing money from the church, mm-hmm. and doing really awful racist things. Mm-hmm.
It should only take one of those instances for people to
lose respect for us and mm-hmm. not follow us anymore. And they should, should lose respect for us and not follow us anymore. But if I just, in my ignorant whiteness, say something on Facebook and I'm trying to be helpful and I screw it up, and someone calls me on that, I hope my whole church doesn't fall apart and go, I can't follow her anymore. I hope what would happen is that I would step up to the plate and say, I screwed up, you guys, and I'm learning, and let's learn together. And here's where I screwed up, and I'm going to tell you exactly where I screwed up.
That's
I'm
going
to own that completely.
Yeah.
And then people can still follow me as a guide. They don't need to have the whole thing fall out from underneath them. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
So that's
I think that's, I love what you're saying. Yeah, part of the work here is, for those who do have influence, to help to, I don't want to say teach or educate, that sounds too patronizing, to help just illuminate for others the way that we have a propensity to follow, put people on pedestals. So I just love what you're saying. Like, part of the work is to name that, and to mm-hmm. name that, no, we are human and we will let you down. And our hope is that when that moment comes, that it won't erase all the other things that you know about us. It's one of the things that I can't stand is when I make one mistake with a person or say something bad, and then the 4 years that I have given them reason to believe this one thing for very good reasons, now none of that matters in comparison to this one thing that I said. But what I also have to like hold on to is, if that one thing that I did that offended them was in their list of these are the things that I that are so close to, so offensive to me, so triggering for me, if that's on their list, I can't begrudge them for that, because I have my own list of things that if a person does anything in this area, that's why this whole thing is so subjective. Because, you know, I think about, this is a random example, but like NFL, a couple of years ago, there's a quarterback, Michael Vick, who got into a lot of legal trouble because he was doing dog fighting. So he would purchase and breed dogs and then participate in dog fighting, and went to prison for it. Came back from prison, in my opinion, did a lot of work to try to reconcile and restore. So for me, I was okay with getting back on board cheering for Michael Vick. But I'm conscious of how there are many people for whom dogfighting is so, you know, just if for them, it's in the list.
It's such an egregious thing.
Such
they
an
egregious.
Thank you. It's a great
it.
Word. Such yeah. an egregious thing. Like, no, I can't ever receive anything good from you again.
Yeah.
yeah. And then conversely, there are NFL players that have been charged with domestic abuse and violence against women. For me, that's an automatic, you're out, like you're on my shit list. I don't know. I'm not going to ever But then for other people, that's like, oh, but they apologize and they're in counseling and they've made it up and like they're all good. Mm-hmm. So, oh, it's just.
And you kept watching the NFL and cheering for the NFL and air quote voting for the NFL for a long time with a lot that you hated about it.
Yeah.
And it took a line.
You could bring that up too. Yeah.
That's part of this conversation where you finally quit the NFL this year, but it took a line that you got to. So it was like, how you keep questioning, is it the type of things?
The quantity.
Is it the quantity? I think the answer to all of this is yes. It's all of it. We are constantly making decisions about what we're okay with and what we're not okay with. And and the Jordan Peterson thing, it's funny because you're like, I'm glad that I wouldn't have if I knew, but I'm glad that I didn't because then I got these things. And I think my mind goes to, which I totally honor and think is great and respect that. So I'm not criticizing that. I'm just sharing my frame. I'd be like, you're glad? Why? You could get great things from anybody. Like, you don't need to get it from him, from that douche and give him money, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you're missing out on some thing in your life that you would be the worst for if you didn't get. I'm sure he has great thoughts, but I don't think they're worth the crappy things that he does and says towards actual people groups, which is very different for me than Sam Harris, who doesn't actually speak out against actual people groups, if that makes sense. I'm coming back to that again.
Yes.
You think he does?
I think there are plenty of people that would say, absolutely, Sam Harris speaks out against people groups.
I need to look into this Sam Harris guy. Well, I keep trying to speak about something that I
don't
know.
Just by nature of him being anti-religious and an atheist who wants people to be atheist. So
we disagree. Welcome to the Kate and Colby show.
Right.
I totally disagree, but I love it. It's such a good conversation. It wouldn't be fun if we agreed.
Pete Holmes has this line. I think it's in one of his comedy specials where he talks about, like, in 50 years from now, how on earth are we going to vote for president anymore? Because everyone now lives their whole life on social media. So we know all the things about everybody. So you can imagine a candidate in 50 years, like, trying to run for something. And then they'll pull up some tweet from when they were 12 years old as dog catcher 912, where they said this random thing. Like, everybody's track record is just so on display now that you can imagine politics and the coming generations being just a whole.
Let's vote for people with good track records. Then I just think we can have an actual, I totally get what you're saying, but I think it's very realistic to have a standard to draw that line and then hold people to it.
I know.
And do like I just said with us as pastors, like you can make a mistake. I'm not making you be perfect. You can make a mistake, but you have to be the kind of spirit and attitude that says I made a mistake about it. And I can hold you to that as a leader. If you want to lead this freaking country, you better be able to own your mistakes and you better meet moral standard that I have.
I don't think that's too much to ask.
And if I want to read your books and listen to your podcast.
Okay, so I love that you're bringing up books because that's what was just coming up for me was it pains me that there are people that will never allow me to have any sort of influence. Like I can never be a source.
Oh, you're coming back to yourself about this.
Like I can never be a source of truth or goodness or grace for so many people because of my theology on sexuality.
Yeah.
Like that for so many people is just a line in the sand. Mm-hmm. And that grieves me because I'm like, I have so much to offer and you're just going to completely discredit me and everything that I have to say, because of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that grieves me. And so it's just hard for me then to not take that and externalize it and give that to others and say, I'm not going to receive from you or give you a chance to have the potential to have a source of anything in my life because you have this particular. And I do that. I know that I do that. If I find out that a theologian or an author in the Christian world is not open and affirming, I'm not going to read their book. I'm not going to listen to their sermon. Like I've built that up. I've built that wall in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I'm trying to pay attention to.
My brain is like, you have every right to, but they don't to you. That's how my brain works.
Yes. Okay. And that's how my brain has worked until these last couple of months.
So
I'm being stretched to let some of these walls down and understand that people that are so radically different from me can have a lot to offer me and to teach me. Mm-hmm. And maybe I don't want to just construct a world in a bubble where all my sources look and sound and feel just like me.
I'm really glad that you're being stretched. I'm going to stay here in my bubble.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. All right. If you're anything like me, there's a chance you might have tried to skip through the first time I said this at the beginning of the episode. So I'm giving you another chance to not miss out on this amazing deal from Studio, a Scandinavian headphone company that is crushing it. So go to studio.com. That's S-U-D-I-O. Use the discount code Kate and Colby, and you will get 15% off any purchase, whether you get the Tray model, which is what I've been wearing lately, the Bluetooth in-ear with the sweet wingtips that keeps them in my brain with 9+ hours of battery life, or maybe you want to check out the Regent model, which has interchangeable caps. So that's right, you can customize it, and you can get some sweet bass, some sweet treble, all with Bluetooth. Studio.com, use the discount code Kate and Colby, get 15% off. You're welcome.
So I'm laughing at myself. You're in pain still, aren't you?
No, that was me. Oh. Well, yes, I am. But also I was listening deeply.
Colby got very beat up playing basketball. So I was laughing at staying in my own little bubble, which also made me laugh at myself about how much of a hypocrite I can be. Because I'm kind
sure,
of like...
Sure, go on.
Shut up. Well, hypocrite actually might be an inaccurate word or too harsh of a word because... I don't know that that's hypocrisy, but basically, like, I'm kind of sounding the gong of, like, only do things that align with your values all the time. Like, everybody knows I'm not that quite that strict and that we've talked about values and allowing nuance in your life a lot on this show, mm-hmm. but I am, like, in this episode, I've been speaking to that part of this, right? I've been kind of like harsh on the dude. If you're mean to people, like I'm not going to read your books or whatever. Right. I've been.
Yeah. Like I'll drop that person if they.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there are things that I just buy at Hobby Lobby. Like I just got to.
Yeah, that's true. I've been there with you buying those things.
Actually, the other day I showed up at church with a Hobby Lobby sack. And I felt kind of dumb coming to our church with a Hobby Lobby sack of stuff. And I set it down right in front of the worship team. And I looked up at one of our worship leaders and another person who sings in the band. And I'm like, you guys, don't judge me. Yes, this is a Hobby Lobby bag. I shop at Hobby Lobby. And one of our worship leaders laughed and goes, I went to Chick-fil-A yesterday. Which I also will go to Chick-fil-A.
Yes, sure. Why not? So, okay. So
total hypocrite sometimes.
Yeah. But... Okay, so our listeners probably get the joke as well as to why there's hypocrisy there.
Those two places don't align with my values.
They don't align with your values. Yeah. Okay, so if these were people, so mm-hmm. if instead of Hobby Lobby, it was a person, we'll call this person Howard Long to keep the HL going.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, and if Howard was an individual that you knew that was, you know, actively anti-LGBTQ and funding anti-LGBTQ initiatives, you would have no problem being like, nah, Howard, I'm out. Like, deuces. Mm-hmm. I don't have, there's no part of me that wants any more, that wants to allow you to have any sort of impact or influence or say in my life.
Yeah.
So for you, that's where it's what I'm hearing is like, I can recognize.
Whereas I'll buy... what are the things that I have to get at Hobby? Think I have to get at Hobby Lobby? Whatever. I'll buy craft supplies.
Googly eyes.
I can buy googly eyes anywhere though. Okay. It actually is really. It's funny. You know me. I'm an external processor and a verbal processor. Mm-hmm. So what's happening for me right now is, I intended to say that and laugh about it and just be like, yeah, that's the human experience. Like you made the very blatant statement earlier on in this episode that you just don't practice consciousness around these things. You're like. Yeah, I don't know where my dollars go. Like I can't be conscious about everything.
Yeah.
Right. So we've both kind of had that like, haha, like you can't always live into your values. And we say that sentence on this podcast all the time, that you can't always live into your values. But what's happening for me personally right now, as I'm doing this confession but laughing about it, is that the laughing is dying away for me and I'm actually feeling really convicted. Mm. Like as I externally process this, I'm like, why the hell do I need to go to Hobby Lobby? And I certainly don't need a fried chicken sandwich and waffle fries. Okay, even as I say that, I really want the waffle fries, but I can let it go so easily delicious. From my life, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah. So, yes.
And I would rather do that. I guess that's what I'm saying is for me, and I get that you've said differently. We have been differing on this conversation a little bit, but for me, it's like, as I'm processing this, like, no, I'm ready to give those things up. That's kind of dumb. That's kind of dumb for me. Well, I'd rather just, if I'm that conscious, like, of course we can't be perfect. Of course we can't always live into our values.
Yeah.
But if I'm that conscious of something, like, it was you saying that about if it was a person who was, how did you say it about, you were like if militantly.
Yeah.
Going, like,
funding anti-LGBTQ initiatives.
Yeah. That sentence made me sick to my stomach, like so sick to my stomach. I'm aware of that. I'm like very conscious, very aware, and I know that I care very much and speak out all the time about that. I do feel like a hypocrite, and I do feel like it's time to just quit those things that I'm that conscious around and have that much awareness, you know?
Sure.
For me. So.
Yeah, I think that's the, I think that's, just how these things tend to happen is you just eventually hit a tipping point.
Yeah.
Right? Like I was mentioning the NFL, like eventually hit a tipping point.
Yeah.
Where it's not like I was okay with all the previous things that were.
No, but you enjoyed so much about.
Yeah. But and eventually, eventually you either sit with it long enough or you think about it hard enough or you just do a gut check of like, no, I can, like you said earlier, yeah, the things that you might get from Jordan Peterson, you could get those from other sources. And I think there's a sense in which you're right.
But you're also right. Like, you're also right when you, I'm thinking about when you said not wanting to live in the bubble and wanting to learn from people who are different than you. That's spot on as well. So that's why I think this conversation is so unbelievably nuanced. There's a couple different lanes
happening, huh?
Yeah, there is.
It's all in the big freeway of this conversation, but.
Yes, we are zooming through so many layers. I want to go back to talking about people that we glean wisdom from and the tendency to find out something that we don't like about them and then drop them. It's interesting that we're having this conversation because I just finished reading Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows with one of our kids and the entire.
Are you okay?
Do you
need a minute?
No, I'm not okay. Every time. So this is like worst. My sixth time, I think, finishing the series. And every time it wrecks me, you know, I go into a deep post Harry Potter depression. I can't do it.
PhD.
Yeah, it's really hard. But anyway, beyond that, it's fascinating because the whole, and major spoiler alerts happening. If you haven't finished the Harry Potter series yet at this point in your life, get with it.
Then why are you listening to our show?
You have issues.
You're not part of our pod fam. I'm kidding.
That's mean.
You belong.
Everybody belongs. We dropped them because they didn't like Harry Potter.
We'll just give you special orange bracelets so that everybody knows who you are.
Anyway, the whole book, it's the seventh book, the final installment of the series, and the whole book, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, kind of fixates on and centers around Dumbledore's character who's passed away, and Harry post-mortem is finding out all these things about Dumbledore and realizing he's like, maybe I didn't even know him. Maybe I didn't even know this character who was in my, this person who's in my life. And he starts to find out some gruesome things and some major mistakes and some things that could very easily make you say that Dumbledore was a hypocrite and not like a fraud.
Sure.
You could call him a fraud.
Yeah.
In fact, definitely people were portions calling of the book. Him a fraud. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you get to the very end and you get to hear Dumbledore himself say that about himself, like kind of own it himself. So that story always gets to me. And I think it's exactly what we're talking about, is that whole idolizing human beings, like that we do that is so fascinating, that we just latch on to leaders in the world and then expect everything they say and do to be perfect. And then the minute we find out they're human, drop them. And that's just always stuck with me. And the thing about Dumbledore that is illuminating some truths for me, I think, is that I know it's a fictional character, but that's JK writes it so brilliantly. It feels very real. So I think I'm learning universal truths from it, which is that, again, I'm externally processing. But I think with Dumbledore, you fall in love with him for 6 books and you find very little fault in him. You start to get a little frustrated with him 1 book, but you don't see anything but this great, wise, amazing
leader.
Sure,
you never question his motivations.
Then all of a sudden, at the very end of the story of the series, you get this boom, questioning his character and learning these things that really just make him human. But they are things that we lump in that category. Like we were talking about earlier, those things that are on your personal list of you've screwed up in this way. And I think what's coming up for me every time I read that book is that's the whole point of all of this, is that the things that we screw up at, the things that we do that are atrocious even in our lives, actually make us, like for Dumbledore, what I'm getting at is that for Dumbledore, his story uniquely, the ways in which he screwed up, the things that you find out about him that make you go, I'm dropping him, I can't follow him anymore, are actually the very things that made him so, all the things that you loved about him previously before you found those out.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So like all of our awful mistakes, all of our missteps, the great irony or paradox, if you will, is that those are the very things that make up all the goodness in us that we admire in other people. I know it's not always that simple, but I think in the story of Dumbledore and how clear that is, every way in which he misstepped it all led to him being the person we admire. And I get that it's not always that linear and that clear, but that really is the way life works, is that we love people because of all of their humanness. We latch on to like certain aspects of them and get obsessed with that.
Yeah.
Like the wisdom. Oh, he's so wise. And then we love that person for all their wisdom, when wise people are not born wise. Beautiful people are not born beautiful, beautiful on the soul level is what I'm saying. They're not. They become those things by living a lot of life and making a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. No, it's well said. It's well said.
But I know that doesn't cover everything we're talking about, because we're also talking about when someone is that beautiful and that wise, and then they make, like, because Dumbledore, it's his past.
Yeah.
But then there's people who, like, from there let us down, and that's a whole other.
Yeah. Area. So that's why, that it's not how I meant to say that, as though it's some sort of summary statement. But just going back to that random metaphor I said a few minutes ago of this is a big freeway and we got multiple lanes that all sort of fit on this road. As you're saying that, I'm like, yeah, one of the things that comes up for me in this conversation over and over again is that there are different aspects of it too. So we will have a person that we might let into our life and have a bit of influence and learn wisdom from and learn and just really admire. And then either we discover something in the past, like you're saying, how do we hold that information then? Do we let them be human because it was in the past? And appreciate that might have formed who they are now? Or do we say that thing in the past is so offensive to me, or, you know, violates my core value so much that I have to now cease letting this person in? And immediately when I start having those internal conversations, I realize, okay, when I make one of those judgments for myself, okay, yes, that's a bad thing I learned about that person, but I'm still going to let them have some sort of space in my life in terms of influence. I have to, if I'm going to be any sort of person of integrity, give that same permission to other people when I find out from a friend of mine that, wait, what, you like this person, or you read that person, or you are a fan of this individual? Like, I have to be okay with the fact that everybody draws their lines differently and they have different things that for them are disqualifiers.
I really want everyone to have the same moral compass as me, though.
I know you do.
That would be nice. So do you. Everyone does. That's not unique to me. We all want that. We all want everyone to just...
to share our values.
Yes,
and be like, no, that should repulse you as well. You should also be repulsed by that.
Yep. Yeah, it's really hard. Because even as I was feeling convicted about the Chick-fil-A and the Hobby Lobby, I'm like, okay, I can let those things go. And then I thought of Johnny Depp movies, and I'm like, damn it. I can't stop watching Johnny Depp movies, especially since he's going to be in J.K. Rowling's movies. Anyway, I can't live perfectly aligned with my values. I come back to that. I don't intend to give those up.
No.
And yet, like, if everybody who knows me knows that, like, women's issues and issues of domestic violence are, like, so core to
so core.
What I stand for. And so yet core. Here I am saying I'm not going to quit watching Johnny Depp movies. That's so hard.
And I feel like that conscious decision of yours should not, therefore, mean that you are a person who lacks integrity and is not actually committed to women's issues and domestic violence. I feel like that shouldn't discredit you from that.
Yeah. What's interesting is J.K. Rowling is getting criticized online for that, for having, like, me, I'm just saying I'm going to watch them. She's casting for, I mean, all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
She's casting him. She's gotten a lot of flack because she's the same as me with her values and morals, and he's doing that. So.
And I, it's just like, I get it. I totally get that criticism that no, you have sacrificed your right to say that you stand for these things or believe in these things. I get it. And I've said it and I've been there, but when you're on the other side of it, it's different. It's like, wait, no, I can't, but I'm telling you, I am still committed to this thing. And also I say yes to this thing. Yeah. It's so messy.
Yep.
It's so messy.
Yep. It comes up again and again and again and again. We even had an issue over the NFL stuff because I was saying for a long time I didn't want it in our house,
mm-hmm.
and, which you honored, mm-hmm. and you were going to watch it elsewhere.
Yeah, there's a period of time where
I'm not
going to
judge
you,
but mm-hmm. I personally can't support it. And in that time, you had said something, I think online, if it's okay to share, about if such and such happens, then I'll finally quit the mm-hmm. NFL or something.
Mm-hmm.
And myself and one other person, a friend of ours, were like having a hard time with you writing that because we were like, wait, but you didn't care enough about this thing, and this thing.
Yeah.
And you only drew your line at this. So we do. We judge each other for those calls all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the time. So I don't know where we go from here. Having this conversation is, I almost said, is literally, we're watching a lot of Parks and Rec right now, and
literally?
I constantly want to talk like Chris. Is literally, like, really dragged out. but this conversation is, it must be a good conversation for at least you and I. I don't know if anyone else will be moved by it, but for you and I, because it's stirring in me a lot of questions that I think I'm going to take from here and try to figure out some stuff moving forward in my own life. Like, I mean, I just told the whole pod fam that I'm not going to do Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A anymore, but it's more than that for me. It's like, how am I going to judge my friends from here on out in the calls that they make and my husband and how do we work it out when you have a different call that you make, but we live together. And so our calls affect each other. And all those questions that are stirred up from this conversation are fascinating for me. And I'm going to sit with it for a while and it's going to continue to really
rock me. It feels like
that,
doesn't it? It feels like the more you sit with this particular topic, which is kind of even hard to name, as we've mm-hmm. established over the last hour, it keeps going.
I'm
like,
not even able to put words to
it. How do you summarize this episode? I don't know. I mm-hmm. just, I know that I feel like the more that a person would sit with this, the deeper they would realize their own inconsistencies in their life. And I like how you pulled yourself back from the word hypocrisy, because that has a layer
it's too
of judgment
harsh, right?
that
I think
doesn't
it's
feel
too
like
harsh.
That's appropriate.
Yeah.
But inconsistencies, like, we all mm-hmm. have them. And it is so much easier to call out in other people, and we're really good at it.
Yeah.
And I feel like we would be much slower to do it the more conscious we are of our own inconsistencies, but that takes some real, like, honesty and sitting with this and naming the people that we support and the people that we read and the bands that we listen to and the entertainment that we consume and the goods that we buy, all that have behind them things that violate what's important to us.
Yeah, it is a dance for sure. I don't think I definitely land on there's no possible way to walk around on this earth being it's a perfection issue for me. Like, mm-hmm. can we be perfect and consistent and always live into our values and work for justice every second of our days? I really don't think so.
No.
But it's a dance because I do want to be known as a consistent and reliable person. A person of integrity. I want to not just be known as that. I want to be that. It's not about being known as. I want to be that. I want to be a person of integrity. but it's a dance because there's just it. Life is hard.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need a fried chicken sandwich.
Sometimes you do. What if we wrapped it up by inviting the pod fam, if they wanted to practice some vulnerability in this or some introspection, they could email us or Facebook message us and just like share. Yeah. So here's a,
what are their inconsistencies?
Yeah, here's a person that I really like, but I'm afraid to tell my friends. Or here's an author or a musician or whatever. Here's my Chick-fil-A story. Here's my Hobby Lobby example. Here's my Jordan B. Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of practice like naming that for yourself. And if you want to share it with us, we will be your safe, non-judgmental. We won't respond with, what the? You're not really progressive. You turn in your card. I don't know. That could be kind of fun to practice that.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll come back to this again as well. Yep.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Kate and Colby Show. To learn more about us or hear past episodes, to send us a question or a comment, just visit thekateandcolbyshow.com. And just make sure to subscribe to the podcast while you're there. That would be super easy. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded and produced here in San Diego by Matthew Blake.